I once heard from some very smart people that the best form of learning is through repetition. I heard it over and over and over again until that message sunk in. So I guess it works, right? I know I share a lot of strategies and tactics on this podcast. So given this message of learning through repetition, I thought instead of sharing something new this week, I'd reshare one of my most fundamental and foundational strategies. One that since I have implemented has changed everything for me. And that strategy is what I call content honey traps. But what I want to do this week is to reshare that strategy in episode, but I do want to do it from a slightly different perspective. So bear with me. Because if you're an expert listening to this, you know that our frameworks are just ever changing as we develop them and as we develop ourselves. As we grow and learn and test and iterate ourselves, so too do our frameworks and the things that we actually teach. For example, I had Kevin Schmidlin on this podcast talking about how he extended his original framework that he was calling TDE or Targeted Daily Engagement into TPP or Targeted Podcast Pitching framework. You'll also be hearing from Christine McAllister on this podcast in a couple of weeks, whose zone of genius is getting experts like you to go onto other podcasts, but who has now adapted that framework into a new one around creating 30 days of content from just one guest episode. As you can see, we're always changing, morphing, extending, and adapting our frameworks. And that's exactly what has happened to me too. What you'll hear over the next couple of episodes is my original framework, Content Honey Traps. And the reason why is because I've actually started building a framework on top of Content Honey Traps. One that I completely forgot was something we were also doing that helped us make over 200,000 in our first year podcasting. In fact, it's something we do now. Now, day in, day out, week in, week out, that has been so incredibly effective for us to grow our podcast audience and to actually monetize them. It's a framework that I call content dripping, which I'm going to actually do a separate podcast episode on. But for now, because Content Honey Traps is such a core component of content dripping, I wanted to reshare that first with you. So with that said, let's get into it. Can you relate to the following? You have a high-ticket coaching or consulting business. You've decided to start a podcast because you know, or at least you've been told, that it is one of the best ways to get your messages out there to grow your audience. You put in the effort to make it work, and then you kind of lose momentum. You don't really see the results that you want. You're not really getting leads from your podcast, or at least any you know of. You're putting in all this time editing and publishing your episodes. You're starting to feel the pressure and a creative drain from having to come up with content each and every week. You're feeling creatively tapped out, uninspired. You start resenting it. And maybe you go back and forth like this for a little while, not knowing why you're doing it, but doing it anyway, because in the back of your mind, there's a little voice saying, but what if? What if this is the key to my success? I just haven't unlocked it yet. I've just got to keep going. Can you relate to this scenario? I think a lot of us high-ticket coaches and consultants can relate to exactly this scenario. I know I have, until I figured out a way to make it work. I made over $200,000 in my first year of podcasting with absolutely no experience and a $53 microphone. And I'm so excited to be sharing with you this exact journey and strategy of how I did this in today's episode. My name is Deidre Shen. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Capshow. Let's get into it. So excited for everyone to be joining us on our very first episode of this Grow My Podcast show. We're going to be talking about how in our first year podcasting, we actually made over 200,000 with absolutely no experience and a $52.99 microphone that we found on Amazon. That's what we're going to talk about today. And why I thought this was important to actually kick this new podcast off with is because, well, why
should you be listening to us? Why should you be going through this journey with us as we kick off and grow a new podcast show? We've done it before completely, by the way, I'm not going to lie, completely unintentionally. And once we started becoming more intentional about it, which we are definitely going to be bringing to this podcast, then we started seeing it just work. So consistency in our leads, consistency in our sales, and we've never turned back. We've loved podcasting since then. So my name is Deidre Shen, and I am the host of this podcast. I'm going to be joined by my co-founder, Bonna Rai.
Hi, everyone.
Just waiting for her to jump in and say hi. And gosh, okay, so let's kick off because I want to talk about this journey. It's insane when I think about it now, how this all came about, how we were able to make $200,000 in our first year, over 200K, by the way, in our first year podcasting. And by the way, I do want to set context that this did not happen overnight. It definitely did not happen overnight.
1 year sounds so short, but over was so long.
Oh gosh, it felt like, yes, one of the longest years ever. And to tell you the story about how this all happened, I want to take us back to 2019. And August 2019 was actually when my husband, his name is Ash, my co-founder, Bonna, and I made the move from Sydney, Australia to New York City. And actually what I'm going to do is let's leave this photo in our show notes, but there's a particular photo of us outside our new apartment, and we had literally lugged 18 suitcases. Between the three of us, we had lugged 18 suitcases from Sydney all the way to New York. And by the way, like this was, we landed. So in Australia, obviously, Southern Hemisphere, we left the middle of winter and we landed here in the middle of summer.
I think I was wearing at least 27 layers. Not that Australia is cold, but because I'd run out of room in my suitcase. Yeah,
exactly. I had all of my thick coats on.
Like, you're like, travel hack, Bonna, just wear your heaviest clothes. I'm like, that is definitely my mink overcoat. I don't have a mink overcoat, but.
So there is, yeah, so we landed here in the middle of summer, layered with all of the things we could not fit in our 18 suitcases. We have a photo of that we're going to share with you in the show notes. So I want to first tell you about, because it was a pretty left field decision. It seems like in the scheme of things to have moved across the world.
Especially if you knew our personalities.
So at the time, Ash and I were running our businesses in Sydney. So we had a dessert bar called The Chalk Pot, of which we had grown to 5 locations, and we had a burger restaurant alongside that called Stacks and Burgers, and we had grown that to 2 locations. So you kind of look at that and you'd be like, okay, well, we have brick and mortar stores. It just did not make sense.
Why would you do that? Just leave them all behind.
Right? It did not make sense. Now, what happened, what I guess was the catalyst for this decision, was that at the end of 2018, we actually found out that one of our most trusted employees, he was the store manager, and almost we were kind of nurturing him to become sort of Ash's 2IC in the business overall. We had found out that he'd been stealing from us and he'd been stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like that's the most.
For a long time.
For a long time. Yeah. And yeah. So anyway, so you can imagine just how, you know, having a betrayal like that happen can. It was almost like it was this, the thing that we needed almost to snap us out of this hamster wheel. I feel like we had created for ourselves, which by the way, we didn't know we had, but it was like, again, something like this happens and you start to look at everything, right? You start to evaluate like where you are in your life and what you want to be doing and all of that. And for us, I mean, I've, you know, definitely always wanted to live and work overseas. And so this was like, if we don't do that now, like, when are we ever going to? Because we're on this trajectory of growth, which is great. And I'm not, you know, I'm not definitely not downplaying that. But is that actually the business we wanted to grow? I think that was a decision that we had to ask ourselves.
That's huge.
And so at the time, you and I, we were working on another business idea. We were working on a fashion technology idea, and which, you know, was really cool. And I, you know, I was kind of like, well, if I want to explore another country, another city overseas, well, what better place than New York City for the intersection of fashion technology? That was what I told myself anyway. I was like, there is no better place in the world.
This is it.
This is it, to explore this idea. And do you remember when we had this discussion? So I told you, well, first, I think it was over brunch, and I was like, I was a little bit nervous, I'm not going to lie, because I didn't know how you were going to take it, like whether you thought that that meant I wasn't invested in the idea or, you know, what it's up. But I was like, you know, obviously you knew that this big thing had happened and, you know, I was still getting over the, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but like the grief of that.
Mm.
And then I was just like, yeah. And so I think we're just going to move to New York City.
I do remember this conversation. I love that how you're like grief, like with the, I don't mean to be dramatic. I'm like, you just found out that you had been stolen from one of your closest people who've been nurturing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make too much of a big deal out of this.
That's quite funny. But yes, I had, you know, and then you were, you had been contemplating moving. There was a few opportunities looking at from a corporate perspective. I remember that conversation. So I guess not entirely out of the blue, but I think the big part was, you know, at the time, you know, talking about how it was, the decision was very much like, you're moving, so how can we make this work?
Mm.
And I didn't feel like it was too big of a, because once I realized, I'm like, oh, okay, immediately like, oh, I'm going to come visit you guys at some point. It'll be fun. You were, are a morning person. I'm a kind of a super night owl anyway. So the time zone might actually work quite well.
Mm.
And we were very much in how can we make this work sort of mode, I think, in that conversation.
Yes.
So after the initial thing of going, oh, well, that'd be, you know, like, you know, obviously when one of your best friends moves, like that's always going to be tough. But I think we're very much in that, okay, how can we make this model work? And I know how like, you know, like dedicated you are to your commitment. So I knew that wasn't going to be a big thing, but I remember that conversation and I was like, okay, I think we can do it. I think we can do it.
Awesome. I mean, this is a great thing about, you know, our relationship is that there's just so much faith and trust, I think, in who we are and which I guess we were still kind of like, you know, finding our way through that as well. Right.
Yes.
But I do remember, I don't even know how long after that initial conversation.
Not long.
Not long.
Knowing you
2 weeks,
but I also remember like 2 days.
A few days.
Because I think you had that conversation with me just before you were going to see your lawyer about the actual move, like,
right,
you know, like what you're going to, what visas you're going to be on and things like that. So that's why it was like becoming real. So that's why we were like, okay, let's figure out what our, you know, model looks like.
Yeah. So. Okay. So I do have the sense that, okay, so we probably had that initial discussion on like a Sunday.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I think it was a Wednesday.
Yeah.
That then we had the second conversation.
Yeah.
And that conversation, it was at dinner. I think we just worked out at the park. We had a trainer at the time and we were having lasagna.
Yeah.
And I don't, anyway, we were talking about it and things like that. And I was like, so I spoke to my lawyer and she kind of has this thing, like this, this like buy one, get the second half price.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of thinking, Bonna, if you just wanted to, did you just want to move to New York as well?
LOL. And then I remember saying, but wouldn't the second person be Ash? And you're like, no, that is part of the application. It's like,
yeah, that's part of my application. Yeah.
It's like, buy a second application, get that minute for half price. And then we had a bit of a joke about it, I think, you know, where I was like, oh, you know, we can't resist a good deal, whatever. LOL, this is so funny.
And then you were like, no, but
but really, I really want this deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you not realize I'm very Asian?
I'd like to. A couple of years and come back. I don't care about you out of this.
Yeah.
But I cannot unsee this deal now.
We'll do a whole other episode on another podcast about that. But this is ridiculous. I'd rather pay more overall.
But I do remember that exact moment. And I just remember first thinking, this is funny. And then second thinking, that's ridiculous. And then third thinking, all in the space of course, 1 second. And then third going, well, is it so ridiculous? It's kind of ridiculous, but that sounds kind of fun. And then going, what, but why wouldn't I go? Like, what is the thing that's keeping me here? Not having a compelling, you know, obviously have family and things like that, but not something that, you know, you guys actually had more things keeping you in Sydney, right? I'm like, I don't have, you know, bricks and mortar businesses, multiple businesses that need me here, not in a relationship or anything like that. So I was just like, there was literally, and then I was like, let me think about it.
And you were like surprised but also not, I think,
so if anyone, when you get to know me, dear listeners, you will realize that I'm a quite a high D in the DISC profile, and that means that I need action and I need decisions made. And so at the time I was being very patient, I was like, sure, take your time. So,
I have to think about this life-altering decision that I've given.
So we'll talk to her.
I mean, you do have a bit of eye in you from the DISC profile. So you were like, I mean, obviously take your time, have a think about it, but let's chat tomorrow. Because remember, there is a deal on the line. There is, it's only good for 24 hours. I need to go back to my lawyer.
Anyway, so then, yeah, so what went through your mind?
Yeah, so we, as you say, we just worked out. We were doing, and then I think my trip home was like 15 minutes or whatever. No, it was longer than that. I'd already, at this point, I'd been moving with my parents. And then I hadn't just yet. Anyway, doesn't matter. I was thinking, oh my God, this is so exciting. You know, I did have a couple of friends who'd moved to New York and things like that. I think I was thinking about it very intellectually. And then I got home and I'm like, I've got to shower, I've got to do my usual thing. And then in the bathroom, as I was kind of getting ready for all of that, I just like completely burst into tears. And I don't even know what kind of tears they were. They were just like, because usually I can feel, I'm a big crier. I can feel when I need to cry, right? It comes up, it sits with me for hours and then I burst into tears. But I just burst into just random tears and I was like crying. And it was like, what is going on? And then I would just keep on crying.
Wow.
I didn't even know this. I think I would have been mortified if I'd known to be like,
did I just
keep on a cry?
I mean, you did.
But I think it was a bit of a release. Now that I think about it many years later, at the time, I didn't really know what that was about. But I think it was a release of like, because at the time I was sort of thinking about what do I want to do next, you know? And I think it was just a mix of like, at that point, I think I realized I was going to do it. I hadn't spoken to you. I hadn't thought about the logistics. I hadn't been like, this is what I really want. But at like, you know, at the deepest, most emotional level that you can't quite understand just yet intellectually, you've decided something.
Yes.
And I think it was just like fear and excitement and all of that coming all at once and not having an appropriate response other than to cry.
So I think that's what it was. And made the decision.
Wow.
Yes.
So, I mean, you'll be proud. It was like a couple of hours.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Making a decision. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then did you tell me the next day?
I think so.
Okay, I mean, our memories are terrible.
Me, yeah.
But I feel like
me out of my miseries, which is great.
You know, I prefer to meet a deadline if I can. So.
Okay. All right. So that was end of 2018. And then fast forward, you know, because obviously we had to get some things in order.
Yes.
And, you know, so we made the move in August of 2019. 6th of August or 3rd of August? I keep forgetting the exact day. 6th of August, we landed in New York.
Yeah.
And we landed with savings. We just had savings. What we had done before we left was we had prepaid our rent for 12 months. Right.
So that everyone I tell here that we did that, they're like, you are what?
We had no other choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we had prepaid our rent for 12 months. We had some savings, which were allocated pretty much to, okay, how can we make this stretch for the next 12 months that, you know, we were here in terms of utilities and food. And by the way, you know, we didn't have really much of what does living in New York actually mean in terms of how much utilities cost and how much services cost and how much food. And then on top of that, all the tax and
the tips,
like, because we don't tip in Australia, right?
Yeah. Like,
this is all,
I think workers get paid a fair amount.
Yeah. Exactly. So we had to kind of readjust our allocation.
Yeah. So that runway was maybe last 12 months and maybe like 6 to 9 months.
We'll worry about that later.
We were like, you know what? In our minds, we're like, we have 12 months to make this thing work, to make this fashion technology business that we're working on work. Now, did that business work?
It did not.
You can probably tell that it did not work. So after only 4 months, we decided to fail it.
Decision making.
It was like, kudos to us. You've got a hand to us. We kind of worked out that the problem itself was probably not a big enough one that people were willing to actually change the habits for. So we made a really, really tough but courageous decision to fail that.
Mm.
And then we're like, now what?
We, January 2020, December 2019.
Yeah.
January coming into Happy New Year.
Exactly. Like, what are we going to do? Okay. So, I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? The great thing about having gone through that experience was that it led us, because it was a fashion technology idea. So we were talking to a lot of boutiques and brands. And that led us to actually providing agency services to help them build, to help them acquire customers. That's actually what we ended up falling into. So that was, as you said, beginning of 2020, we had, around 5 months maybe left of our allotted 12 months. And it was at that point that we decided to make the transition into coaching.
Yes.
Because agency was great, but, you know, I don't know if anyone on here has listened to this, has an agency or tried it, but it's
work. It's hard work, and you really got to want to be all in on it to scale it.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we just were not in the headspace to be like, okay, we want to be hiring people for this business. So we instead thought, let's transition to coaching. We've heard a lot. We've definitely been targeted with a lot of Facebook ads about how great coaching is.
Yeah. I remember that one ad that made us decide to get into it. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what we did. And specifically, we went into high ticket group coaching, helping e-commerce businesses grow, because that's what we're doing in agency land. So that just made sense to do that in coaching land. So it's a business called The Growth Boss. So we decided to do that. And I wish I could say that we were successful straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
I wish. It would have been nice, right, to be like, well, we had 5 months left.
Yeah.
And then the 5 months exploded into 5 years because we did so amazing.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. That was not the case. Now, luckily, because of the agency work, we had a little bit, we'd given ourselves a little bit more time. So we probably had maybe an additional 6 months-ish.
Yeah.
So we, at that point, we probably almost had a year to figure this out. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that those initial couple of months in coaching, we were earning, what do you call it, like a big fat zero? I'm like, how else do we say it?
Oh my God, those were stressful months.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like, you know, when you start, you know, your coaching or your consulting business and suddenly your Facebook feed is just flooded with ad after ad of this coach and that consultant looking like they're providing the exact same thing that you are. And you're like, what? And you know, right? You know that they've been in the game a lot longer than you. They have an ad budget because clearly they're running ads.
Yes.
They have a list. You go and stalk them and you see that they have like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers.
All these testimonials.
They're making money and you're not. Well, that was what was happening. We were watching all these other coaches have this brilliant success with seemingly all this capital behind them. And I think we had maybe a $2,000 credit card.
Because, getting credit here was also, we're starting from scratch, right? There were so many things.
So many things. And we probably just had an additional 6 months to make this work. That was all we had going for us.
Right.
And this is the thing, right? We knew that we could genuinely help and serve our audience, but this was what we're up against. So it was like, good luck. It was scary.
Good luck to us.
It was scary. It was frustrating. And I don't know. I'm sure that there are people listening to this who probably knows exactly how this feels like. And at the time, we tried everything we knew. We threw every single thing we knew at this, right? We were doing all things. We were running Facebook ads that we couldn't really afford, but we're like, you know what? Everyone else is doing it. We've got to try this.
We'll make this money back.
Yeah. Right? We were running challenges. We were running webinars. We were reading all the books. Like I brought no books with me from Sydney because I was like, I've only got this many suitcases. That's like a lot. I've got other things. I could not bring any books. So basically now I have full bookshelves because I was reading all of these entrepreneurship books. And I remember reading Traffic Secrets by Russell Brunson. And the one thing he said that stood out to me was, you got to start publishing. You got to start publishing. And so we did. We launched a podcast to start publishing. And I went on Amazon. I found a microphone that wasn't too expensive because we just did not have the funds.
Yeah.
So I spent $52.99 on one that got pretty okay reviews. And we started recording not knowing what in the world we were doing.
So funny.
We didn't know how to edit. Like literally, I think we were just like, if we didn't like what we heard, we'd have to re-record the whole thing because I did not understand the concept of like, you can cut things and you can insert things. I did not know any of that. So we launched a podcast and still nothing. So that clock that was governing how long we had in New York City, it was ticking and it was definitely not slowing down despite our best efforts. And then I came across this other book. So it's written by Daniel Priestley. It's called Oversubscribed. And he mentioned one particular thing and things started to click into place in my mind. So he spoke about the 7-hour rule and that people need to see you and consume at least 7 hours of your content before they can actually come to know, like, and trust you. And that is when you make sales.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. I think there's something here. I think we need to be more intentional about the content that we were creating because we had this podcast, which we were creating content.
Yeah. We're putting the time in like every Sunday. Yeah.
But the problem was that no one knew about it. That was a problem, right? So what I kind of worked out
at the time I did not call it this, but now I call it this, but we had to create what I call content honey traps. Messaging that would have people feeling so compelled to want to listen to our podcast. And then we had to lay our content honey traps all throughout our podcast so that they would feel so compelled to get onto our list. And then when they're on our list, then we would have to continue that conversation with them, directly with them. Mm. And this was how we were going to get that 7 hours that we needed them to consume so they would come to know, like, and trust us. And from there, we'd get them into our conversion event and we'd make the sale.
Mm.
And so that was it, right? Yeah. So we had to create these content hunting traps. That was what was going through my mind.
Yes.
And by the way, we had to do all of this quickly because that clock was still going. We're about to get kicked out of the country.
Exactly.
So it was a pretty crazy idea, but that was kind of an epiphany that I had, just seeing what other successful entrepreneurs were doing. So we started being way more intentional with the content that we were creating, what we were talking about, who we were talking to, what we were doing in our social media. And honestly, I didn't think anything was working. I was like in freak out zone.
Yeah.
Okay. Because 1 month went by and there wasn't much change. But the good thing, I mean, we definitely stick to our guns because we kept going anyway. We kept podcasting. We kept creating this long form content, kept showing up on social media, kept emailing. Our list, fortunately, was growing slowly, but it was growing. So there were people to actually email, which is great. Another month went by.
Yeah.
We kept going and another month kept going. And then I remember September 2020, that was a good month, but like literally we did not have much time left. September 2020, we had just launched our offer for the third time. That was the third month in a row that we did this.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we were, oh my gosh. Okay. I still remember the moments. I think I was, cause I'm a early sleeper. So I was like pretty much in bed.
Yeah.
And we started getting Stripe notifications.
Yeah.
Stripe, like, you know that the emails that come through?
Yeah.
And you're like, it's on Stripe. And it says, congratulations. We started getting high ticket sales coming through.
Yeah, I remember that because I think at that time we just still used to squeal every time we made a sale.
Yes.
And when I say squeal, I don't think we're squealers, except for when that happened. It's like, what? This is crazy.
So crazy. Exciting. So we had our first 20K month, September 2020.
Yes.
And then since then, we've grown month on month. And in that first year, even with big fat zeros for our first few months, we were still able to bank over $200,000 by being super intentional with how we set up our podcast traffic funnel, setting it up with these content honey traps. And so this system, content honey traps, it is the backbone of what it is that we do, what it is that we teach. It's what enabled us to start our software business called Capshow. It's what helped us transition our coaching business to help you high-ticket coaches and consultants who podcast and want to get consistency in your lead gen. And it's also enabled us to stay over here in New York City. I mean, we've been here for almost 3 years now.
Yes.
Doing something we absolutely love. So I now have my content honey traps humming. I mean, obviously we keep optimizing them.
Always.
Which is why we have consistency in our lead flow. And all I can say from the bottom of my heart is that if I could do this with a $53 microphone and like literally absolutely no experience when it came to podcasting.
And minus editing skills, not even zero.
Exactly.
Minus editing skills.
If I could do it, then you can 100% do it too.
Yes.
And so that's what we're going to get into. So stick with us. We are going to go for a quick ad break, but when we come back, we're going to actually start to pull the curtains back about what content honey traps are specifically and some of the mental models that we use ourselves to think through how to create them.
Excited for that.
Okay. So I'm sort of walked you through our whole journey about how we made 200K in our first year podcasting. And now I want to deep dive a little bit into how this strategy actually works in content honey traps. So I thought to start, because we could be literally here all week recording this. So let's not do that. Let's not do that. We're going to definitely over the next few episodes, you know, talk more and more about this. But I thought today we should at least give a little bit of a summary, a little bit of a flavor on what content honey traps are and what they could look like. So to start, I thought I would give you a little bit of insight into the way that I think about content honey traps. So as you know, or you should hopefully know by now, the content honey traps itself, it's a system designed to compel your dreamiest clients, your high ticket clients, to follow you through your front end funnel. Okay, it's from your social media to your podcast to your conversion event
to the sale. Let's make that moolah.
And honey traps everywhere.
Honey traps everywhere. Okay. But, and that's great. It's easy to say, but it's like, how?
What? How? Yeah. Exactly.
And so, okay. I thought, and you know, it's so, what I love about talking about this is because, you know, podcasters, everyone listening, you know, that the core of a good podcast is that you provide two things generally, a really, really great story and really great value.
Yes.
Right. Pretty much every podcast that I've listened to have these two things. Mm. And if you don't, definitely come to the podcast actually, because I will, I will take you through.
It's your first sign you need this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. But okay. So the way that I think about this, almost like the decision tree that goes through my mind, is if I record a podcast episode and there was like this great story that was told either from myself or from a guest or someone where I was like, oh, that there's this unbelievable thing that happened, or there's this super great cliffhanger because you like I heard that and I was like, oh my gosh, what happens next?
Yes.
Great content honey traps to use. Okay. This is where we then go into what we call our story-based content honey traps.
Yes.
Now, if you recorded a podcast episode and, you know, the story was great because obviously, you know, but you're like, there wasn't anything super compelling in there. There wasn't something that was like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. Then we want to go into what we call our tips-based content hunting traps, which is really about how you compel people, your audience, based on the value that you provided.
Yes.
In that episode. Okay. So that's kind of like overall the how I think about, okay, which content hunting traps am I going to be using?
Mm.
So I thought for this one, for this episode, that we would start with story-based content hunting traps. And we do have four mental models in each. So four mental models in our story-based content hunting traps and four mental models in our tips-based content hunting traps.
Yes.
Today I thought, let's start with our story-based ones, and then in the next episode we can talk about our tips-based ones.
Absolutely.
Sound good? Awesome. So, Bonna, do you want to kick us off with those four mental models?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are definitely my favorite because, you know, I love some drama. I think everyone loves some drama. But like you said, the stories are really important because what they do is they evoke emotion. And we all know, or maybe we don't, and we should know, that emotion is actually what drives action. So these tools, like I said, we've got four different ones. And what we did is, I guess, we really tried to crawl into that brain of yours.
You don't want to be in my brain.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't need to be here in as long as for the shortest amount of time possible. Let's take the goods and go, you know?
Yeah.
And what this is really pulling out, teasing out from your brain, how you tell stories and how you, what are those bits that we think, you know, makes it for a really compelling story. So there are four main honey trap tools that are all, each of them have a slightly different trigger in terms of what makes that story compelling. So the first one is what we call the paradox.
Mm.
The paradox is really about how do you contrast a really big result that you in the story yourself, or, you know, your guest, right? If you have them on the podcast with you, you contrast that with a very surprising or unbelievable fact, right? And the contrast creates intrigue because people are like, how did Deidre, you know, who by her own admission, completely, you know, talentless in the podcasting realm with no money to buy fancy equipment, how was she able to generate $200,000 from her podcast? Huge result, right? Immediate intrigue. And that's what you use. That's when you have that, you know, that huge result and an unbelievable fact, you can actually intrigue them. So in that case, you would use the paradox tool.
Mm.
So this is one of our favorites.
Yeah, which you may or may not have noticed that I used for this episode.
We eat our own dog. Totally believe in this. Okay. Now the second one, which I know you've alluded to as well, is what we call the cliffhanger. So we all know our cliffhangers from back in the soap opera days, right through to every single movie, basically.
I swear I probably watched The Bold and the Beautiful for like years, like
every day.
I have to find out what did Ridge. Is he going to choose Taylor or Brooke? Like, what is going to happen?
1,000th time.
I know.
But I still need to know which one is going to be.
Are Stephanie and Eric going to get back together? Oh, my gosh. I needed to know.
Or is he going to marry Brooke? You know,
too many things.
Yeah. Regardless, what we're doing is we're creating temptation for our audience. We're creating temptation because whether it's in our guest story or our own story, let's pick the most dramatic moment, right? So that time that your trusted store manager, you found out that, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars have been stolen from you across the course of how many ever years. Huge cliffhanger. I'm like,
What happens next? What do you mean? Don't leave me hanging on this, right? So something, if again, you know, there's a something in the story that is, you really want to tempt your audience. So this is, we use the cliffhanger tool for when something like that has happened and you want to create a compulsion for them to want to tune in to find out what happened next. So that is the second content honey trap tool when it comes to story-based. The third one, I love this one too. It's called the big reveal. Okay. So now this is what you want to use when either in your story or your guest story, there has been some sort of unexpected twist, right? So in doing that, in hinting at that unexpected twist with the big reveal tool, you're going to really lure your audience in because they're like, oh, you know, there is that intrigue again. You know, you're not giving away anything, but you're kind of hinting at this something that's completely, you know. So this one, I think, is kind of a nuanced one, but works really well. So one kind of funny thing that happened in our journey, which we didn't go into today, was there was a time when we were, we took on a very unconventional, a very unconventional vocation. That was, you know, and it definitely, it was one of my favorite times of us together. So you just kind of, you know, being corporate ex-bankers, had always been in this very white collar world, we kind of dove into a very different vocation. So again, let's put this into context. We had that clock was ticking.
The clock was ticking.
And we were, like, I wouldn't say desperate, but we were, you know, we were like open.
We had to do what we had to do.
But this, my friends, is what's happening with the big reveal right now, where you just kind of lure your audience in. So that's one of my, I do like that one as well. And finally, we have,
should we give it to our audience?
Oh, we want to reveal.
Do we want to reveal that we became delivery drivers?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
I'm sure there were other vocations on people's minds as they were listening to that.
That's right.
We became.
We were full kitted out with like the glove. We had the gloves that would help us, you know, lift boxes and stuff.
Yeah, we didn't realize how rough that was on your hands. Again, we'd never done that before.
Exactly.
But also we hadn't driven on that side of the road before. So this was a whole story. And you know what? We will share our Instagram account in the show notes.
Oh my gosh, we should. Yes. Yes. Definitely. You've got to check out the show notes, you guys. We'll leave photos. It is going to be, it was pretty epic.
It's pretty funny. Okay. So that's the big reveal. And the fourth and final story-based content honey trap is what we call the sharer. So here, what we're doing is we're giving away the ending. So again, in your story or your guest story, we give away the ending of something, you know, remarkable, fun, funny, crazy, dramatic that happened. But what you want to do is you want to whet your audience's appetite for the details of how we got there. So in one of the stories we told of this episode where you're like, Deidre made Bonner cry.
Which I didn't even realize.
Yeah, technically that happened. That's the ending. Yeah. But how did we get there?
Yes.
Tune in to find out. So the share is another good one because, again, usually every story has a good arc. You know, there are circumstances that lead to that. And you tell it anyway. So you basically get your audience to be listening. So those are the four story-based content honey trap.
Amazing. So what we'll do is we'll do up like a quick cheat sheet on those, and you can grab them from the show notes. If you want to head over there, we'll have a link that you can, and then obviously access it from there. And yeah, go get it, you guys, and go and laugh at our exploits in the show notes as well. When we were delivery van drivers and the 18 suitcases that we'd carted over across the world. So that's it from us for the first episode. Leave us a comment in our show notes. Tell us what you thought, any feedback you have, And if you use any of those mental models, like, please let us know. We would love to know that we have served you in this specific way. Sign up for the podcast. It's going to be amazing. I cannot wait for this. It's just so cool. And please follow us, follow this podcast, share. We'll leave some of our socials in the show notes as well. We would love your support. If you could leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform, again, as podcasters, we know how important that is. So we would really, really appreciate your support. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.